The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the Fighting Through podcast. Great unpublished history. We'd had no training as regards D-Day. We once had their K-rations. And a grenade came over, hit Charlie in the chest. The shell came over, and I felt a thump in my back. All I remember about that hospital was the matron. She'd have made a good darts player. We joined up with the Canadians, because the Canadians were there when we got there. We saw a Dakota on fire.
Yes.
We saw two jump out. We came across these Germans lying in the gutter, about five or six of them, pretending to be dead.
This is indeed the Fighting Through podcast, episode 74, Coffee with Ken Cook. More great unpublished history. Hello again, and another warm World War II welcome to the Fighting Through Second World War podcast. I'm Paul Cheel, son of Bill Cheel, whose World War II memoirs have been published by Pen and Sword in Fighting Through from Dunkirk to Hamburg. The aim of this podcast is to give you the stories behind the story. You'll hear memoirs and interviews with veterans in all the countries and all the forces. Normandy World War II veteran Ken Cook introduced the show, and you just heard a few snippets from my recent meeting with Ken, where he raked the brain cells to bring us a bucket full of memories and musings about his war and much more. So that's coming up soon. Plus, I've a few more extras in the PS. Right now, I want to share some absolutely fantastic news about the German boy soldier memoir sent in several months back by Hardy Langbein Allen. Hardy's just told me that she signed a publishing deal with Pen and Sword. So, save the last bullet. Will be available from booksellers sometime next year. So what first appeared here as a great unpublished history is now going to be great published history. And if my download numbers are anything to go by, there's a great deal of interest in the German side of the war, with a massive 10,000 listens to the episode already. I'll keep you posted on progress with the book publishing date. And if you want to remind yourself what it's all about, check out episode 69, German Boy Soldier. And remember, you heard it first on the Fighting Through podcast. I've pretty much cancelled the feedback and family stories segment this time, because Ken's interview's pretty long, and also quite a bit of the material sent in by you fits better, I think, with other content. So that'll be covered soon. Now over to Ken. Briton Ken Cook was in the 7th Green Howards Infantry, and at the tender age of 18 was thrown into action for the very first time, storming Gold Beach on D-Day, 6th of June 44, in the very first waves of attack. 6th and 7th Green Howards together with 5th East Yorks formed 69 Brigade, part of 50th Division. And as we threaded our way through the minefield of Ken's memories, the stories just seemed to be getting better and better.
Just a couple of questions before we start. Can you hear me okay?
Pardon?
Can you... Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm okay, yeah.
All right, I will speak loudly. And mm-hmm. All right. Have you got any... You had PTSD at one point during the war, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you still suffer flashbacks now?
Not so much.
Yeah. Do you think there's
not so much.
Is it like waking up at night or...?
No, not now. I used to do.
But you sleep all right?
Yeah.
That's good.
And about 20 years ago, there was a story in the daily paper of a veteran told his story. Not a week after that, another veteran told his story, and it gradually snowballed, and you're getting, we've got all those stories in the paper.
Oh, wow.
There's even stories coming out now.
Yeah.
Because people wouldn't talk about it then.
No.
And gradually, reading those stories, I've got rid of some of the flashbacks.
Yes. Oh, good. So it's kind of been therapeutic for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Oh. Then we have our play, that Bomb Happy play.
Yes.
When we did that... That's released something.
Tell you've mentioned Bomb Happy, so tell me about it.
It's our scooter friend Nick Bearby. He's done a lot of work for us, you know, arranging things, and we support the scooter York Scooter Club as well. And he was out with a young lady in town over a cup of tea. Now this young lady is a playwright, and they're just talking, and Nick happened to mention the Normandy veterans, and she said, do you think they'd mind if I interviewed them? You know, there was five of us then, and he said, well, I can't guarantee it, but I'll ask them. Anyway, he asked us if it was okay for her to come and interview us, like, you know. And tell some of our stories.
Yeah.
Which we did. Then she made it into a play. And the first rehearsal was in York Library. And there's about 100 people in the audience.
Yeah.
And for an hour and a half, you could have heard a pin drop.
Wow.
And it was a funny experience. Because we told our stories to her. Then we've got the words coming out of the mouths of the actors.
Yeah.
They're a funny feeling somehow, you know.
Surreal is the word for it, I think. Gosh.
And then we went on tour around Yorkshire, different places. We've got a standing ovation for each.
Gosh. So how long ago was this going on? Because was this pre-COVID?
Pre-COVID,
so it was a couple of years or more.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we've missed a lot. With it, COVID, you know, it could have been different things.
Do you think they might do it again once the...
I think so,
drawbridge is lifted, as it were.
Then we went up to Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah.
With it.
We went up to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Oh, God.
And we collected the fourth prize.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, excellent. Certainly, this is certainly a recommendation for anybody else listening to catch it sometime when it even comes back on.
I'll show you the...
That is...
I don't know if you've seen that photograph, have you?
Hang on. No. So that's like Abbey Road, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's four veterans crossing the zebra crossing. Where was it?
At Sword Beach, was it?
Oh,
there's a zigzag right up there.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Stephen got that for me.
So they made a jigsaw out of it, but this was at Sword Beach.
On Sword Beach, we'd just been to see the Piper.
Yeah.
And we were coming back to the coach.
Yeah.
So one of our honorary members, we come to that crossing there, and he said, stop the bus. So we stopped. He said, I've got an idea.
Mm.
So we all got out the bus. We stopped the traffic on the road. And we did that. And at the night time, back at the hotel, our courier, he had his laptop. It had gone viral.
Wow. So all the traffic's lined up.
And a fortnight after, we had a letter from Paul McCartney.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
It's a typical British humour.
Someone must have brought it to his attention. Oh, gosh. Apparently, the 7th, you were just about, I think we were about 20 minutes behind Dad, because he was on the first wave.
Yeah, yeah.
Or mm-hmm. And you were just behind, but you landed 400 yards too far to the right. Did you know this?
Yeah.
And then you have to hike it up the road, up the beach to get to the...
Well, your dad went that way, and we went that way.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I think they went nearly straight on, and we turned to the left a bit. But we caught up with them again at... the first village, Crepon.
Crepon, or Versumer.
Versumer, I think.
Yeah.
And we cleared up after them.
Yeah.
And the next village, Crepon, we went straight through, and they cleared up.
Yeah.
And we carried on like that for, I don't know how long, you know.
You often overlapped, didn't you?
Pardon?
You often overlapped, like that sort of...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We even overlapped. Well, East York's overlapped us, but... about 7 o'clock at night, because chap shouted over to me, we were in trenches, ready for the night, you know, and the East Yorks came through, and I heard this chap shout, and he was a blonde lad, we called him Blondie. I joined up with him, and he was in the East, when we split up after our basic training, went to different regiments. He went to East Yorks, I went to Greenhowards, and other people went to different regiments. And he shouted over, he said, Dennis is dead. And it clicked with me. Another lad had joined up with him. He'd been killed, you know.
Oh, dear.
Dennis, yeah.
Was Dennis in the East Yorks?
I don't know.
No, okay. The East Yorks got a hell of a hammering on Gold Beach, didn't they, I think, from what I've read.
Yeah. It could have been in East Yorks.
Yeah.
That's the Arromanche Museum, that's one of the landing craft there.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Is that the size landing... Is that landing craft assault? Is that an LCA?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Because there's different sorts, wasn't there? There was an LCT, but obviously they were a lot bigger.
That's LCAs.
Yeah.
Went down to Portsmouth one time. Can you remember when the Queen went across in the Britannia? Not a big American aircraft carrier went with them over to Normandy.
Yes.
But we were in Portsmouth when they set sail for that occasion.
Oh, my gosh.
And they went to a D-Day museum in Portsmouth. We were looking round and there was a landing craft in the museum.
Yes.
No, and we were looking at it, you know. And this chap came up. He says, I drove one of them. He said, we were glad to get rid of you lot.
I bet they were.
I made the right message.
Yeah.
You know.
Have you heard that story about a Marine Tandy? He's a Marine. And I think he got some... It was a military medal or some distinguished thing.
He got the Distinguished Service Medal. Full story in the PS.
He was bringing a landing craft in, and it was either East Yorks or Greenhowes it would have been, because the tale was being told by somebody coming in with the East Yorks, and he said over on his right he could see this landing craft, and there was a guy hanging over the back of it with his arms resting on the... you know, resting on the rear, but it's the lower half of his body underwater. And he looked at him thinking, well, is he sheltering from the bullets and what have you and just taking cover? And he didn't really understand what had happened until after he then heard that this Marine Tandy was the Marine, or one of the Marines in charge of the LCA, and they'd lost their rudder. The connecting the cable or whatever it was. And he was in the water steering the rudder. So, you know, quite amazing, really. But he got...
It's funny as you say that, because people have asked me what it was like going across.
Oh, yes, go on then.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, we went out of scramble nets.
Yeah.
Into the landing craft, set off. Right.
Yeah.
For some reason, I did the same thing. Leaning over the side, you know.
Yes.
Watching all the fireworks, the battleships and all that going on.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, just like bonfire night, 1,000 times, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
I can't explain it.
Yeah, you were just watching it like
I was just watching it.
Entertainment.
Some people being sick on the landing craft. Others were, you know.
How long was the run in? Can you remember from leaving your ship? It's a couple of hours or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
And did you get seasick yourself, or were you okay?
I wasn't seasick. No,
that was good.
No. I'm just leaning over the side watching all the fireworks. Oh, I'm bothered about that.
What was the noise like?
Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's bang, 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 bang. Yes, it was.
Did you see any missiles going overhead?
Oh, you know shells, the rocket ships?
Yeah.
There were hundreds of them going over.
Sort of multiple rockets all going off at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. And your battleships were having a go as well.
Yeah.
You know. Now, afterwards, you're thinking, how did they survive that, the Germans?
I know.
I mean, Point de Hoc.
Yes, that's the way the Americans landed.
That was bombs, shells, they threw everything at that.
Yeah.
And they were still there when they got to the top of cliffs.
Yeah. Have you been to it?
I've been to it, yeah.
I've been as well.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably, it's almost destroyed, isn't it? Well, not destroyed, but the shell holes are major.
I talked to one chap. I said, why didn't the battleship fire at the cliffs and bring the cliffs down?
Oh, gosh.
Sort of thing, you know.
Yes.
When you think back, sort of thing. Yes. Well, they could have done that,
It's funny what they probably hadn't. I don't know. They obviously didn't plan it that way. They did reconnaissance, didn't they? So they knew where some of the placements were.
When you look at some of the things, we were really very, very lucky. Because.
Yeah.
Rommel wasn't there. The story goes that he. On the 5th, or the 4th, was it? He got out of bed, opened the bedroom curtains, it was chucking it down. He said, nothing's going to happen. So now I'm going to be at Berlin.
Right.
It's my wife's birthday on the 6th.
Yeah.
And I bought her a pair of shoes in Paris, so I'm going to Berlin.
Yeah.
His generals were playing war games in a chateau. The rest of his staff was in Paris having their knees up.
Yeah.
So they say. Now then, if it had been a decent day, or decent weather, Rommel wouldn't have been in Berlin. I don't think we'd have got off beach.
Yeah, yeah.
When you come to look at it that way, you know.
Yeah. I want to go back to the start in a second. One final question before we do that. Because you were talking about being on the landing craft and coming onto the beach. Did you ever look back to see, you know, just after you'd landed? You'd come from the sea. Did you ever look behind you to look where you'd come from and see what was behind you?
No.
All the ships and everything else, obviously.
No.
It's just that Dad, in his book, said he never looked back, but he wished he had because you know, the way it's all
just
been described.
And then the officer on the side said, you know, we're getting near, like, you know. And we ate one of those cross pieces.
A hedgehog.
With a mine on top,
yes.
You know. But it didn't go off, so we assumed that the engineers had defused it, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And we carried on to the beach and...
Gosh, that was lucky.
So right, dropped the ramp and we were off.
Yeah.
And right, get off the beach as soon as you can.
Right, and there we'll leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to take you back to before the war, when war was first declared, what were you doing? Do you remember?
Yes, I was an office boy.
Ah, okay.
At an ordnance factory in Nottingham. Now, it's a long story. My dad was a miner.
Yes.
I used to live in Nottingham, just outside Nottingham.
Yes.
A mining village. East Kirkby it was. East Kirkby in Ashfield now.
Yeah.
And it was a miner. And he was also St. John's Ambulance, and he attended to all the accidents down the mines.
Yes.
And in 30, let's see, Teddy. He went to night school as well while he was a minor, and he got a bit good with figures. And anyway, he came out of the mines in 38, and he got a job at this ordnance factory in Nottingham. They made 4.5s, 3.7 anti-aircraft guns,
yes,
and Bofors.
Yes.
And got this job there.
So this is what your dad was doing, and you got the job as office boy in where he was working.
He got me the job, yeah, as office boy.
Brilliant. Can I just very quickly come in, because before I forget, my mum, some amazing coincidences, because my mum, she was a young girl during the war, and she worked, she didn't join up, but she had to work in a factory, in a bomb factory, and she was putting the clocks in the bombs, or putting the clocks together.
Oh, yeah.
And that was for the Royal Ordnance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it had a name in that factory. It's ROF, Royal Ordnance Factory.
Ah, okay.
But it also had another name, connected with the shipyards in Scotland, I think. I forgot what it was now.
No.
But my dad got the job there.
Yeah.
And he got his papers. He was 39, mind you.
Yes.
Because he was born in 1900. He was, yeah, 39.
Gosh.
And he queried why he'd been called up. And he said, well, we're short of medical staff. So with him being in St. John's.
Yes.
That's the reason he was called up.
So he was a volunteer with St. John's.
Mm. And he was stationed in York.
Yes.
And he liked it that much, he brought the family up here. So my first year as an office boy was part of my apprenticeship.
Yes.
The following year I would go on the shop floor, yes, on the machinery, you know.
Yeah.
But when we came up to York, when I tried to get a job engineering, no. Because I'd had my first year there, and the apprenticeship was 7 years. So when I went around different places in York, I couldn't get a job. Oh no, you've got to serve your 7 years.
Yes.
But I already had a year as an office boy.
Yes.
That counted with my apprenticeship.
Yes.
So I finished up at Roundtree's.
Ah, okay. Roundtree's of York.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a Roundtree's factory in Norwich.
Yeah.
And they closed it down.
Yeah. They used to send some of our staff to Norwich and...
Did they?
And, but fruit season and all that carry on, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay, yes, yes. Yeah. So, war was declared, and how old would you have been then in 1939?
I was 14.
14, okay.
It was 1940, that made me 15 when I came up to York.
So you weren't eligible to fight, of course, at that point?
No, not at that point.
But did you get involved in the territorials or anything like that? Or?
No, I joined the Army Cadets in
yes,
York.
Yeah, yeah.
I was with them for quite a while, you know.
Yeah.
And then, 43 December, I got my papers and went up to Richmond Barracks.
Yes.
That started my army career there.
And that's the headquarters of the Green Howards, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you did your six weeks basic training. Then you had these different tests, what have you, you know. Then he was sent to different regiments. Some went to tank regiments, signals, you know.
Yes.
These tests, what they did, were different things, you know.
Like
putting a square block in a round hole. Sort of
like thing. Aptitude tests, see what, yeah, you were going, yeah, to be good at, yeah.
But one of my tests was a bicycle pump. You know, they took it to bits.
Yeah.
I hadn't a clue where he was.
Oh, you know,
I never had a bike.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course. If you had a bike, you'd know straight away, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, just laid in pieces on the table, you know, and I'm looking at it. Or is it?
Just sticking up your nose. Yeah. Or worse.
Went through all the paraphernalia, you know, on the range, and route marches,
yeah,
and manoeuvres or whatever.
Yeah.
Went to Scarborough, round there, doing night marches.
Yes.
Bridlington. Bridlington, we went on the march.
Bridlington, yeah.
And it was at night time. It had been freezing. Anyway, yeah, there was a row of beach huts on the beach. So I broke a window
and ran and legged it. Oh dear. Do you know, talking about night hikes or midnight hikes or marches you were doing, when I was in the Scouts, we went on a midnight hike and some got a earthly hour. We stopped and they brought us, I think this might have been at the end of the hike, I don't know, but anyway, they brought us hot chocolate.
Mm.
And we were all putting sugar in the chocolate. And then the first person to drink some spat it out, and they brought salt instead of sugar. So everybody had got this lovely hot chocolate, and at this point everybody had put salt in it. So it went to waste. Mm. Oh dear. Sorry, go on then. You were in with your training, doing your route marches and...
Yeah, and I went to Catterick as well.
Yeah.
For a couple of days.
Is that Catterick Camp?
Catterick Camp.
Yeah.
Then we went down to Gravesend, I think it was.
Yeah.
And we teamed up with the Durham Light Infantry.
Yes.
We were there for about 2 weeks, I think, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And, in their barracks, everybody was double timing, you know. And we had to do this double timing as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh.
You know, that double timing, you don't walk or march.
You do.
You trot, sort of thing, you know.
Okay. What's the point of that then?
I don't know. It's
just fitness.
That's why they call it light infantry, I think, you know. And then went down to Aldershot for a couple of days. Then we moved to an American camp just outside Southampton.
Yeah. This was in the preparation for D-Day then?
That's in preparation. Part. And we went down to this American camp. And it was in a big field. These marquees and all the rest of it.
Yes.
And down one end of the field, there's some tents. We were told to put all our equipment in the tents.
Yeah.
Then go down to the end of the field where there was an officer stood in front of some trestle tables with all photographs of the French coast.
Wow.
And that's the first time we knew anything about it.
Was it Bushfield Camp?
Pardon?
Was it a Bushfield Camp?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm just checking where Dad was, because in the lead-up, he was at Bushfield Camp, and then he was at Romsey. Winchester, was it Winchester?
We were somewhere near Romsey,
yeah.
I think.
Anyway.
Yeah, because I remember the name Romsey now.
I remember Dad saying that there were Americans in the field next door.
Yeah.
You could smell the donuts coming from their camp kitchen.
Went in for breakfast. Full breakfast.
Yeah.
With all the trimmings. And they also had, we thought it was Madeira cake.
Yeah.
You know, light white, snow white Madeira cake in slices.
Yes.
It was their American bread.
Oh, wow.
And we've been on biscuits, bully biscuits and all that.
Hardtack biscuits, you know. Yeah. So what did you think of the American bread then?
Lovely, you
know. It was nice, yeah.
Well, after what we've been eating.
Of course, I don't know what's in hardtack biscuits, but
yeah,
that's the
terrible thing.
Yeah, but it's funny. But white bread isn't supposed to be so good for you, is it? Because they've taken all the roughage out of it.
Yeah,
ironically, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Then, as we came out of the tent with our utensils, there was three big tubs, boiling hot water, warm water, cold water, and you had to dip your
Utensils in the hot water.
Yeah. And went down to Southampton we'd had no training as regards D-Day. There's some regiments went up to Scotland,
yeah,
because there's some beaches there similar to Normandy.
Yeah,
and they practiced on there, and we did nothing of this crawling under barbed wire and live rounds going on. None of that.
Gosh.
We were just more or less thrown in.
Did you know something was coming about when you were going down south, etc.?
No, we didn't know anything until we got the American camp.
So at the American camp, that's when you saw the photographs
yeah. of the coast, the French coast, you know.
Do you think you knew it was France then?
Pardon?
Do you think you knew that it was France by the time you saw the photographs?
I hadn't a clue where we were going, more or less.
Yeah.
Until they told us.
Right.
Then we got issued with some French, this
currency
invasion money, invasion. Sort of thing, you know.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates Sophia Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Then we went down Southampton, got aboard the big ships.
Can you remember which one you were on?
Rapier.
You were on Rapier?
Yeah. Your dad was on Lance.
He was, Empire Lance. And yeah. It's funny.
Then there was another one, Abahad or something they call it, the other one. Ancient Weapons.
But you were on Rapier?
Rapier, yeah.
Yeah. I've got it. Lance, Rapier, Mace.
Mace.
And Halberd.
Halberd, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what Halberd is.
It's a. Is it that thing with the axe head?
It is a weapon, is it? Ah, okay.
Axe head on top of it.
Yeah. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The other three are. From what I've read, you guys, the seventh, were spread out amongst all those ships.
Yeah, yeah.
So, do you think. Why do you think they split you up amongst several ships? Was that so that if one got hit...
Could be.
You'd have your orders and you might be three-quarters strength, but at least you'd still have a capability.
I don't know who was on the other two, but the six were on the Lance.
Yeah.
We were on the Rapier, the seventh, as far as I can remember. Maybe some more on... both those regiments, both those battalions. But people say, do you remember any of your friends, sort of thing? I said, no, I'm not. My name's now. You know, they've gone more or less.
Yeah.
Can't remember. Remember we just one or two. Same as when we came out of the line and went to Bay Air. To get a change of clothes and a shower and what have you.
Yes.
Then we had a game of football.
Did you?
Yeah.
So this would have been a few days after...
Yeah.
Well, Bayeux was taken the first couple of days, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was a big building and it had all showers down one side.
Yeah.
And you had to go in and change all your clothes. What you had on from D-Day sort of thing.
Yeah.
And before. And we had this football match and one of the chaps I joined up with played in that match. His name was Jackson. But did your dad ever tell you why he came back to go to, on D-Day?
Did he ever tell me...
why they came back from... it was in the desert one day in Italy.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, he was Dunkirk. Egypt, North Africa, Wadi Akarit in Tunisia, Sicily, and then Normandy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had two or three North African veterans with us.
Yes.
You know. And seeing as we were young lads,
yeah,
they more or less took care of us, young lads.
Yeah.
You know, saying, giving us tips, and don't do that, do this, do that.
No. Yeah.
You know, and we gradually got used to all these things through them telling us,
because they
don't go down there.
They'd learned
keep your head down there or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and they'd learned these sorts of things first hand.
They helped us youngsters, you know, because they'd been through it before in North Africa and Italy or what have you.
Yes, yeah.
And we were just cannon fodder.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just thrown in.
That's good. So that basically, all the North African experience that troops had, the Greenhowers were quite preeminent in North Africa, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
They were in the yeah. Battle of Wadi.
Well, their only regiment that had two battalions on D-Day as well. And didn't they have a battalion in Burma? I think they did.
Ooh, I'm not sure.
I've just checked, and the 2nd Battalion, the Greenhowards, was based in India pretty much throughout the war.
You know when you mentioned that hot chocolate?
Yes, yeah, with the salt.
Well,
yeah.
When we went down to Southampton, I stored all our gear at the bottom of the ship with all the bunks and everything in there. Then we went up on deck the following morning.
Yes.
And the officer was there. And they were lecturing us on something about what we were going to do. And then this Dakota came flying over.
Yeah.
He said, I want you to take notice of that plane. He said it had the black and white stripes on, you know.
Yes, yes.
Then with black and white stripes on, they're our planes.
Yes.
So no stripes on, their plane, you know. Then somebody came round with these American hot chocolate drinks.
Yes.
In a can, and there was a wick in the middle of the can.
Yes.
You lit that wick like a candle.
Yeah.
And it burned away, and it warmed the chocolate up inside.
Gosh. Bloody. Oh dear. It was two different worlds, wasn't it? The,
yeah.
The equipment. Oh, well, not necessarily the equipment, but
yeah.
The facilities yeah. And the food.
I mean, we once had their K rations. Compared to ours, like going in the Ritz.
Yeah.
Same as when we got up on D-Day morning, 3:30, went down to the mess with Scotch porridge.
So this would have been on the boat?
On the boat.
On the ship, yeah.
So this was before the invasion landing began?
No sugar, salt in it, Scotch porridge, you know.
Oh, yes.
Oh, terrible stuff. Then we had a corned beef sandwich.
Yes.
A mug of hot tea, then a trot of rum.
Ah.
went down, got all our gear together, up on the top deck,
yes.
And down the scramble nets into the landing craft.
Can you remember how you felt when you were climbing down that scrambling net?
Well, Paul, to an 18-year-old, it was like a Boy Scouts adventure.
Yeah, yes.
To us.
Yeah.
Never been on a ship before.
Yeah.
Never been on a beach before, except down in Nottingham when the miners had a day's outing to Skegness.
Yes.
Went on that. Next time I saw a beach was D-Day.
Yeah.
So
oh, God.
When you come to think now, you know,
yeah.
I can't, you know.
Kids have never had it so good, have they?
No, you know.
I know they think this generation has destroyed the planet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, they also saved it in the first place, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm dotting about a bit here, but can you remember when you were coming, approaching the beach in the landing craft,
yeah,
what the scenes were?
What the what?
What the scenes were, what could you see ahead of you?
Oh, smoke,
lots of smoke,
dust,
yeah,
explosions, flashes, different things, you know.
Yeah. And by the time you were disembarking, I presume with the first troops, like my dad, were already ahead of you and off the beach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you remember seeing a knocked out Sherman tank?
No.
Okay.
But I saw a knocked out battery gun as we came on.
Yeah.
Down to the left. The barrel was twisted. You know, one of these gun emplacements, what they had.
Yes.
The barrel was up in the air, it was twisted. Saw that. And there's some German prisoners of war near there.
Yes.
Could see them moving about. Then we carried on to the beach. People said, what's it like? What was it like when you went down to the beach, you know? I said, well, the only explanation I can give is, just imagine you're walking down the street. It's been raining very hard. There's a big puddle of water there. And accidentally you put your foot in it. And what do you say?
Damn.
Look at my socks, I'm wet through.
Yeah.
That's exactly the feeling I had when I did that. I can't explain it, but that's how I felt.
Yeah.
I wasn't bothered about bullets and shells going across, you know. I mean, as an 18-year-old, oh dear, look at that.
Yeah.
And you're wondering when I'm going to change my socks, like, yeah, when can, yeah, you know. And I can't remember getting washed and shaved when I was over there. Toilets, doing different things, you know.
Yeah.
The adrenaline was biggest part of it, you know.
Yes.
And Ken Smith, who was he died just before pandemic started.
Yes.
He was in Duke of Cornwall's.
Yes.
And he said, D-Day, all the shout about D-Day is nothing. It's the following days that were the matter.
Yes.
And I studied that, what he said, you know. And I thought, yes, after was worse than D-Day.
So what do you remember of the days after then?
Cause the day after, we didn't dig in.
I was going to say, what did you do the first night when you first...
The first night we slept in German trenches.
Oh, gosh.
We didn't dig a slit trench when I was over there. Yeah. All the time I was over there.
Pinching other people's.
The German slit trenches was a dotted, took a plug out of the soil.
Yes.
It was like a round hole, about 4 or 5 foot wide, you know.
Yes.
And me and this other chap got bedded down in there. And they brought some food up to us. We had our meal. Then we could hear a radio over the other side of the, where we were digging, like, you know. Bert Ambrose in the orchestra from BBC.
It's Bert Ambrose?
Bert Ambrose, you know, Ambrose in his orchestra.
Oh.
Well-known orchestras in them days.
And you could hear this?
Used to be on the radio. We could hear his music. Somebody had his music on somewhere.
Another surreal moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And we stood to, you had to, you know.
Yes.
Go on guard sort of thing for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Then you got your head down.
Was it, when you were doing that, because I think Dad said it was 2 hours, normally it was 4 hours on and 2 hours off.
Yeah.
Or the other way around. But on Normandy it was 2 hours on and 2 hours off, because you were such a heightened level of alert. But what was it like concentrating for 2 solid hours? Can you remember doing that?
Well, we did 2 hours. I can remember doing 2 hours, down to.
For 2 hours, yeah.
2 hours, then you try to get some sleep.
Yes.
Then in the morning, say 6 o'clock, you did another stand to for 2 hours.
Yes.
Then you move from that position to your next position, sort of thing, you know.
Okay, yeah.
But we brought the breakfast up next morning. We had our breakfast. And yet, where's Tommy? Where's Smudger? Where's, you know? And somebody say, well, you remember that tank that got blown up on the beach?
Yes.
They were near that and they got killed. So that's when it shook you know,
yeah.
That all this stuff was serious.
Yes, yes.
When you couldn't see these chaps, what you'd been drinking with, playing football with and all that, and then, you know.
Could so easily have been you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I say, after D-Day was the worst part.
Yes.
Somebody said that anyway, you know, that they were near that tank that got blown up, yeah. You know. Then when you're going off the beach, say next chap next to you got hit and he went down. You didn't notice that.
Yeah.
But if you did, and you know, there was always somebody behind you saying, "Oh, Sergeant, oh, you know, don't stop." He says, "Medics will take care of him.
Yeah.
You keep going." That's what we have to do, you know, keep going.
Yeah. So, turning to the next few days after that, then what was the action like then? Can you remember?
Not a lot I can remember. Just that the way it was, as I said before, we went through a position, then the six cleaned up and Cluey cleaned up, sort of
overlapping.
Yeah, overlapping sort of thing.
You mentioned Vers-sur-Mer earlier. Have you been to the Gold Beach Museum in Vers-sur-Mer?
No.
You haven't? Obviously you've been to...
I've been to Bay Adam Hansch.
Yeah.
American thing, museums.
Do you think you'll ever go back?
We're going next year.
Well, try and see the... It's badly named, because it's called the... Gold Beach and Gold Beach American Museum or something. And you look at it and you think, oh, well, it's a bit puzzling, because you don't associate Gold Beach with the Americans. But the American bit is something to do with... Nothing to do with the war. It's to do with American stuff. But the Gold Beach part of that museum is really quite good. And if you've never seen it before, it's worth... only Vers-sur-Mer, so it's only round the corner from the new monument, really.
Mm. No, I haven't been to that one.
Yeah.
We've been to most of them over there, you know.
Yeah. Mm. It showed... there was a map on the wall that had been captured from the Germans, and it showed this area where Dad lived.
Yeah, yeah.
Earmarked for bombing, because it was an industrial area.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite sobering. I read some of the 7th Green Howard's action, and there was mention of a railway embankment, taking over a railway embankment. Does that ring any bells with you? No.
Only railway now then. And we came off the beach and went left.
Yeah.
Went down a road, and there was a narrow gauge railway on the right hand side of the road.
Could that have been a tram?
It could have been a tram.
I don't know. Have you heard the Stan Hollis story?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, alright. I'll repeat that then.
This is referring to Company Sergeant Major Stan Hollis, who was awarded the Victoria Cross on D-Day.
His head case, he was.
Yeah, was he? It's a head case. Oh, gosh, I've never heard that. I mean, he was obviously a tough cookie.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear when he was in the desert? I think he was wounded in the desert. And he had a steel plate in his head.
Did he?
And I don't know whether he was wounded before he got captured. But he got captured. And the story goes that Rommel had heard of his adventures.
Yes.
And he asked to speak to him, to Stan Hollis. And he escaped and went back to his regiment. What else did he do? Oh, his... his pal, Charlie Hall. I don't know whether you've heard of him, Charlie Hall.
I haven't, no, I've heard some of his stories.
I got to know Charlie going over to Normandy.
Oh, God.
He was same as us, went over there on these commemoration visits, you know,
yes,
all that sort
yes.
of thing. Got to know him. I said, he knew Stanley, and he was in six, was Charlie. He says, one day, Stan Ollis was stood there, I was stood here, and a grenade came over, hit Charlie in the chest, bounced down, and it didn't explode. So if it had exploded,
yeah.
Stan Ollis wouldn't have got his VC.
He wouldn't, yeah. There was another story about Hollis. Have you heard the one about where he throws the hand grenade down this lane?
It didn't take pin out.
Yeah, yeah, there were two Germans holding them up at the time.
Yeah.
They were sort of underneath, behind a hedgerow or something. And so Hollis took a grenade out, threw it, and then of course they dug down. And they stayed down waiting for it to go off. But in the meantime, Hollis realised he'd forgotten to take the pin out. So they stayed behind the hedgerow. So he then had an advantage on them, and he ran up and shot them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
And after the war, he got his VC, he went home, chucked his VC in a drawer, and said to his wife, that's your pension.
Oh, right, yes, which indeed it was, really.
And then he was invited to go to a meeting or something with different people. And they'd also invited a German officer.
Yes, yeah.
To come and speak or something. Stan said, no, no.
He wasn't interested. Yeah.
Wasn't interested, no.
There's a book by Mike Morgan on Stan Hollis's life, which is very, very good. Have you ever read that?
No.
Do you read?
Pardon?
Do you read?
I don't read, yeah.
I don't mean can you read. but you do read stuff. Okay.
But, yes, some real stories, you know. When that place, it's a bus stop, and he thought it was a machine gun post.
Yes, yes. It was a tram shelter, I think, wasn't it?
So we blew it away.
You've been back to Gold Beach, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's there now, isn't it? They've moved it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Restored it. And you can still see the bullet
holes. I've got a photo of that. I don't think it's a only slot. No, no, I don't think so.
You know the little exit road from Gold Beach?
Yeah, yeah.
It goes past the Stan Hollis
hut. Yeah, yeah.
Did you come up through that or did you...
Yeah, we came through there.
You came up there?
Mm, yeah.
All right, okay. So you passed that so-called house with the circular drive.
Some pan. Toilet pan thing. Yeah,
right, yeah. You passed that. Yeah. You probably wouldn't have seen it at the time, would you?
Mm. That's Madame Gundry. She was a little girl.
She was in
Paris landed.
Yeah.
And she was in the cellar with her mother and her sister. The father was up on the stairs looking through a bedroom window. And one of the parrots took a shot at him, missed him.
Gosh.
So he banged the door shut, ran downstairs. I think one of the parrots was banging on the door, like, you know. Opened the door, welcomed them all in. Then he went into his garden and he dug up nine dozen bottles of champagne. Give them to parrots.
Oh, gosh.
And the story goes that one of the parrots gave that lady, when she was a child, a bar of chocolate.
Yes.
The following years that he went there with his commemoration days and whatever, he always took her a bar of chocolate.
A bar of chocolate. Oh, what a nice story.
Yeah.
To commemorate the event, yeah. Fabulous.
That's Omaha. Part of it, anyway. You've been home, haven't you?
Yeah, I haven't been to the cemetery.
Haven't you been to the cemetery?
No.
It's marvellous, you know.
I've been to Bayer cemetery several times.
Well, the Americans, they send a squad of soldiers over every 5 years to look after it.
So, you got wounded, didn't you, at some point?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
We were in a hedgerow, waiting to move to another position. And we were just kneeling down, sort of thing, you know. Like, ready to move off. Yeah. Rifle in that hand or whatever, you know. In this hedgerow, 14, 15 of us.
Yes.
You know. And this shell came over. No, I don't know whether it hit a tree and splattered all of us down, or it was an airburst.
Yes.
That exploded, and then the shrapnel came down. I heard somebody shouting and screaming or whatever, and I felt a thump in my back. Next thing I know, there were two chaps picked me up and took me to the first aid station.
Yes.
Then the next time I woke up, I saw a circle of lights. And I realised after that was the operating theatre.
Yes.
Next time I woke up, I was in the field hospital in Bay Air, and this nurse was sticking needles in my backside. And that was more painful than the other things, because she kept coming about, I think, about every half hour, every hour, sticking a needle in, you know. The tears were rolling down me, you know.
Gosh. I wonder if that was penicillin.
Penicillin, you know.
That was a new development then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
But boy, I said, no, not again. And she was...
Oh. So,
and,
do you remember what date that was?
4th of July.
4th of July.
4th or 5th of July it was. Yeah.
His dad was wounded on the 30th of June.
Mm.
So you're pretty close together in that respect.
Yeah.
But I think his situation was similar to yours, except he was sitting having lunch at the side of the road. Mm. And a shell came over and hit him and somebody else at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was out of it. So you were out of it, obviously.
Well, I was operated on in Bay Air.
Yeah.
Then I was in the field hospital, and like a big marquee.
Yes.
And the flaps at the far end of the marquee were open, and I could see right down the tent marquee, yes. Like, you know. And there's two Germans walked across. And I said to the nurse, where's my rifle?
Yeah.
What do you want your rifle for? Two Germans are gone.
Gosh. Were you delirious or...?
She said, they're two German medical people who are helping us.
Oh, right.
You know.
Yeah.
And there's me one.
What did you shoot?
Oh, dear.
Oh, God.
Then I put on a boat.
And there we'll leave it. That's the end of part one of Ken's interview. I'll be uploading part two PDQ, and if you haven't already got it, you'll be getting it very, very soon. And there's plenty more action where part one came from. See you on the next side.